Husker Doc Talk Podcast, 2015, number 15. Greetings and welcome to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. This podcast is presented by the Remington Trophy. Don't forget the Remington Trophy presentation coming up January 16, 2016 at the Rococo Theater in lovely Lincoln, Nebraska. For tickets and more information, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. This year's featured speaker is going to be Lee Corso from ESPN. This year's Ford's Legends Award winner, Jeff Saturday. It's a great night of fun. Former Huskers, former NFL players, you won't want to miss it. Again, go to RemingtonTrophy.com. Welcome back to another edition of the Husker Doc Talk Podcast. I'm Travis Justice, joined by former Husker All-American. You hear him on the, I was listening to the radio show, the game the other day, and here comes Dr. Rob Zadiska talking about the Nebraska Orthopedic Hospital. He's all over the place, and he's also on this Doc Talk Podcast. Welcome back, sir.
How are you doing? Hey, is it weird that I have, like, odd action dreams where I'm like an action hero, and it's all set to the sound, like the soundtrack of my dreams is the opening and ending music.
But isn't that really cool music? I like the music.
I don't even want to know where it's from. It's just one of these things I always like picture myself strolling down a movie in some action video game or something, blowing up zombies.
Okay, wait for it again. Here comes Rob all badass down the street. Got a machine gun strapped to his shoulder.
He's tech cooled out.
He's shirtless. Blowing zombies away.
Kind of gross right there. I'm pretty hairy. I think my body hair could count as like a bulletproof vest.
You know, when we do this podcast, it's usually we talk about the quarterbacks, we talk about the offensive line, we talk about the week before. I'm going to blow it all up this week because, I mean, that's a broken record. Nothing's getting better.
Have we gone into who cares mode?
No, it's not who cares mode, but I'm going to go into, this is going to be a different podcast. And I think we're going to do this podcast. It's going to be the reactionary podcast. I'm not going to ask you many questions tonight. I'm going to have you react to things that have happened since Monday. And starting with the long letter that Sean Eichhorst sent out to the Husker family. Dear Husker family, it starts. Good morning. I want to express my sincere appreciation to every Husker fan who has come to Memorial Stadium this season to cheer on the Big Red, who has traveled hundreds of thousands of miles to proudly wear the red and white. Actually, it's scarlet and cream, but that's okay. To visiting stadiums, and who has passionately supported our student athletes, our head coach, our assistant coaches, and our staff. Your support and patience as Mike Riley rebuilds our storied program one brick at a time. So, to use a biblical reference, did we have to tear down the temple and rebuild it in 3 days? Because, Rob, this thing was not part of a rebuilding project. We were never sold that.
Okay, one thing, when I saw the letter, the first thing that went through my head was, and cue damage control, post-Purdue game. And, I mean, you could have, prior to the Purdue game, you could always make excuses. I mean, we're two or three plays away in each game, one or two plays a game in each game away from winning. Where I myself had been repeating the mantra that, I mean, this is a team that's 6-7 games away from being 7-1. They're 10 plays maybe away from being 8-0. God, you know what? That Purdue game hit. It just obliterated all the excuses.
A lot of people are saying it's the worst loss maybe in Husker history. You have to go back to the 50s to find one worse. But I guess my reaction I want from you, or the reaction I want from you, because this is the reactionary podcast.
I don't
podcast.
Think it's that bad. This isn't that good of a Husker team. And I think when you talk, well, but
the reaction to the thing is we have to rebuild the program brick by brick.
And that's what I'm reacting to. Now, you know, you start looking at this, and what I really wonder is when we're sitting here looking at it going like, oh, God, they're only a few plays away. In hindsight, have we just been making excuses for what in our hearts we knew might have been the truth? That maybe this wasn't a very good team.
Is that what your feeling is? It's not a very good team?
You know, you can look across the country with the parity in college football. That line between being, you know what, they're not bad, and, you know what, these guys really suck, it's a blurry line and it's a thin line. It's the thin blurred line, Travis. It's, you know, I don't think they're that good. And you know what? And people say, oh, we needed a rebuilding. Well, you know, the excuse that I hear in reaction to that, this whole rebuilding idea, you know, I hear people all over the place, fans and media, both saying, rebuild, rebuild. What? It was a 9-win-a-year program. Where's the rebuilding?
I mean, Bo Pelini didn't have to rebuild after a 5-7 Bill Callahan year. He won 9 games the next year.
He did, but it was, you know what, that was not a pretty 9 wins. Now the Clemson game, and that was kind of a, I think that was a matchup disaster for Clemson. That was just not a good matchup in terms of the style they like to play in the ACC. But much of that season was, there were some ugly losses. There were some ugly wins. And I know the whole idea that at the end of the year, what do you call an ugly win?
A win.
A win. I get that. And he had 9 of them. Now, the other thing is, I think people, when they think back to the Bill Callahan era, Callahan was not a good coach. He was a great offensive line coach at the NFL level, but he's a horrible offensive coordinator. He's a highly, highly, highly questionable head coach. His assistants were highly questionable. But one thing he did do is he brought in great talent. And I think he had some very, very good ball players in the time that he was in Lincoln. I think he did a horrible job with them. But when you go back and start looking at the NFL guys that Callahan brought in, it's pretty impressive. When you look at the guys that Pelini had that first 2 or 3 years in Lincoln, 08, 09, 2010, there was a lot of really, really solid talent on those teams. And, I mean, you look at the guys that – I mean, you look at the Jared Cricks and the Sues and
– Well, Zach Potter played, what, 4 or 5 years in the league.
Yeah. I mean, you look at that group of guys. Those were all Callahan recruits. So – you know, you can't tell me that the guy wasn't recruiting. I mean, he brought in some very, very good talent. Look at that defensive backfield that Nebraska had from about 08 through about 2011. It was all Callahan guys. That was an incredible group of defensive backs. Every year we had 1 or 2 DBs going into the NFL. Good handful of them still playing. Dude, Prince Amukamara? God, he gets injured in the Giants' pass defense, turns into mush against New Orleans with him out there. Granted, Drew Brees can pass the ball. Anyway, I'm digressing there. I'm going into my there's the other half of my 0-2 football weekend. Anyway, I think the talent has significantly dropped off. Now, whether it was developmental, whether it was recruiting, either way, the cupboard was pretty damn bare. And I think you had some key guys with on offense, for instance, because that's what I pay attention to most of the time. You lose a guy like Kenny Bell and Amir Abdullah, guys who can literally pull a play out of their ass. And, you know, I was talking with a couple people about this today. Nebraska needed an insanely improbable play from arguably the best player on the team in Amir Abdullah to bail him out against 1AA McNeese State. We were losing to McNeese State until in the last minute of the game, Amir bailed us out with a miracle touchdown. We were going to lose to a 1AA team in Lincoln. You can't tell me that Pelini was a great coach with a highly talented team when that's the situation we were in. And now, and you saw that repeated year in and year out. I mean, God, South Dakota a couple years prior to that. Jackrabbits come to Lincoln and they give us hell. You know, and at times we played reasonable against some very good teams, but I don't think our talent was that good. I don't think our depth was that good. And you know, when we went up against a better coach team, a more talented team, all of a sudden you saw those runaway losses. It's kind of the hallmark of the Pelini era. Now, I'm not saying every win was a by the skin of your teeth close win. And I'm not saying every loss under Pelini was a blowout loss, but kind of the hallmark, what people are going to remember of the era of when Pelini was in Lincoln, was A, doing some great stuff with Bill Callahan's players, or they're going to remember ungodly close losses and just, or ungodly close wins and then just these runaway ugly losses. I'm not sure the rebuilding idea is that far off. I don't think we were that good the last 3 or 4 years, and I think we had maybe just the small number of key players to bail us out. Randy Gregory would be a great example on defense. You know, look at this season right now. Look at 2015. One or two guys on either side of the ball would make a massive, massive amount of difference. You put a Randy Gregory on defense, you put a Amir Abdullah on offense, and Nebraska probably is this season sitting right now 8-1, 7-2.
Could be. Right.
I think all those close losses they win, and I think they go into Purdue with an incredibly different set of attitude, confidence level, et cetera, and I think they beat a horrendous Purdue team. I'm not sure that the whole rebuilding thing's that far off.
Of course, if you're listening to the Husker Doc Talk podcast, more than likely you found it through HuskerMax.com, the premier source for Husker news on a daily basis. Go to HuskerMax.com. Of course, make sure to follow Dr. Rob Zadiska on Twitter. You can follow him at Doc Talk Sports. He's pretty active on Twitter, so follow him when you can. Now, Mike Riley, of course, had to face the music on Monday, and of course, everybody has listened to his news conference that he had, but we have some sound bites from there, and we're going to get Rob's instant reaction from what Coach Mike Riley had to say, starting with this.
People here care, and when you're disappointed, you know, caring comes out different ways, and sometimes different ways in the same person. You know, some are sad, and some are mad, and some are, you know, they go the other way and are encouraging, and like I said, you probably get it all, but it's all, you know, you have to know from our perspective, if you're realistic, it's all real. I mean, and you know, so it's not surprising. You know, we certainly want to win, and we want to do this for everybody, and everybody's used to it. So we understand that situation, but it all comes from a good thing, which is caring, and you don't want it any other way. I wouldn't want to have it any other way.
He's a positive guy. People care.
Enough.
You care, Rob.
I'm smart enough, and doggone it, people like me. You know, again, a little bit of damage control there, I think. And I think he's from his perspective, you can go two routes with this. You can go the Pelini route and say, pardon my vulgarity, fuck you. You know what, if you're going to be pissed at the job we're doing, kiss my ass, and it's us against
the world. By the way, that was Rob who swore, not me.
It's us against the world. Or I mean, I think he's validating the criticism. I think he's saying, hey, it's well deserved. We get it. We're getting.
Do you think he knew what he was getting into when he took this job? I mean, you're second fiddle in Oregon. You play second fiddle to Oregon State or to Oregon. You're at Oregon State. You're kind of tucked away. You win 7 or 8 games. People are pretty happy. Do you think he understood how much people, in his words, cared here?
I think it's hard to until you've been here, and I mean, Oregon State's played at Nebraska, but that was before Mike Riley ever hit the door there. So, I mean, I don't think he did have a good feeling about it, or a good feeling for how much people cared here, or how much of an intense fishbowl it is. Now, that being said, it's like, for God's sakes, I can't imagine he'd be sitting up there and just be completely clueless looking around the country. Now, I say that, you know, football coaches on the whole, I mean, all of the ones I've known tend to be somewhat narrow-minded and focused on their program and their conference and their opponents, and that's it. They don't look around the country. I mean, look at the college football coaches poll. For the most part, that voting's done by sports information directors.
Yeah.
I mean, the coaches don't have time to pay attention to what's going on across the nation. If you're a college football coach, I'm going to be disturbed if you're paying attention to anything more than what happened in last week's game, what's happening in this week's game, and then a little bit of an eye on the game to follow that. I mean, if you're thinking about more than that, then you're not doing a very good job. You got to be narrow-minded, and you've got to be focused on task at hand. And if you're not, you're not a good college football coach. Mm-hmm. And so at the same time, it wouldn't surprise me if he's sitting there going, holy shit, what the heck did we get ourselves into here?
Of course, Dr. Rob, before we started this podcast tonight, was telling me how much he loves craft beer, and he is a beer snob. You know, he doesn't like drinking the Bud Light. He doesn't like drinking the Miller Lite. Gives him a headache. He likes good American-made craft beer, and you can get that at the Benson Brewery, 6059 Maple Street. They have their own craft beer. They have great food, and now the party room is open. If you're looking for a place to have your holiday party, call the Benson Brewery and get that book. There's four 84-inch TVs, great for watching football, and of course, you can watch the Huskers take on Michigan State on Saturday night at the Benson Brewery. So Rob is a beer snob. There you go. You know, you mentioned that, you know, if it is a rebuilding project, you and I don't know if we agree here or not, but I think that it's a shorter leash for him because people aren't. First of all, Sean Eichhorst is not a popular person right now. He's too introverted for that job. And I know he may not understand this, but leaders lead. And he can lead internally with his own organization and athletic department, but the state is turning to him for leadership and doing it on a release that says, good morning, Husker family, doesn't do it. Bob Devaney, listen, Bob Devaney was a genius. That's why people loved Bob Devaney in that role. And, you know, he would come up and do Bob Devaney's Top 10 on Channel 7. He would do TV shows. Bob would slap backs, kiss babies. Bill Byrne loved to mingle with people. He loved to shake hands. He loved to meet the faithful. And people didn't like Bill Byrne.
Yeah, he was seen as the cold, calculating
businessman. He was dollar bill, but he still mingled. Tom's Tom, but he got out. Sean is introverted. I know you like him, but here's the deal. People are looking to leadership, and if you don't at least show your face, hear your voice, people will never make a connection with you, Rob. They'll never trust you. This is a weird state.
In this state, they won't. And, and that's the thing. People like people.
They do. They do.
They want a people person. Both he and Riley are in a tough spot. I mean, I think they get a bit of a leash here. You know, with all the talk, with all the fear over what's going on down there with the football team right now, I don't think anything happens this year.
Nor should it. I'm not advocating that. I'm just saying going forward, he has to take – I mean, listen, when Lee Barfnik's taking shots at you for, you know, assigning books to read for your – I mean, people are going to look for the negative if you're not going to come out.
I didn't hear this story.
Well, I guess, you know, he assigns books for his head coaches to read, you know, on
Motivation. Eichhorst does?
Yeah. You know, on motivation and life skills. And that's fine. I my boss gives me books to read. It doesn't bother me that much. But I'm just saying you're going to get made fun of if you continue to be an introvert. You don't have to change the way you do business, but you may have to make some adjustments and make your – and I'm not saying you have to comment on a coaching search. You're just going to be visible. You've got to come out and be visible. That's one of the highlights of the success.
Or win football games.
Look at it this way.
Let's say Mike Riley, okay, let's say this year's an anomaly building year. They got a couple of recruits from last year who are coming down the pipeline. They're like, these guys are going to be superstars. They throw these guys out there next year, get a couple more recruits. Let's say next season Nebraska goes 8-4 during the regular season.
People aren't going to like 8-4. Nine's the standard,
They're not, but I think that buys him one more year. Let's say in that next year he gets 10 wins.
Well, then I think people would be happy with that.
Let's say he goes 10-3, and there's a bowl game in there somewhere. Win or lose, they go to a bowl game, finish 10-3. Nobody's going to give a rat's ass at that point if Eichhorst is an introvert or not, at least in terms of how he conducts business to the general public. Now, if you're around him in person, God, he is the most personable guy you'd ever want to meet. It's always amazing that his media persona is so different from how he is as a person. Yeah. And I've talked to other people I know, and some of them are boosters who've had a chance to hang out with the guy a bit, and they'll tell you the same thing. They're like, God, he's just so ungodly personable.
But
he's
you understand, nice most guy. People aren't boosters, and if you're only going to talk to people with money, that's a wrong approach to take. People, well, the fans all across the state want to see you.
And that's the thing that made Devaney so popular was the fact that you know, he spent a lot of time with the boosters.
But he spent a lot of time at the bar, too.
He did, but you could you saw him across the state at public events. You saw him in the media, and even that media interaction was enough for most fans.
Yep.
But I think if Riley starts winning, nobody's going to care about that. Well, I mean, it's kind of one of those things that here's a theoretical argument. You know, let's say Riley's got the, and this was a question that got posed on a lot of blogs, forums, talk radio, etc. Let's say Nebraska's new head coach in 2015 had the exact same record that Mike Riley does. They're sitting here at 3-6, except let's say instead of it being Mike Riley, let's say Nebraska got the coup of the century and brought in Urban Meyer, Nick Saban. Let's say Bob Stoops just got tired of Oklahoma.
You know what people would say? The talent wasn't there.
And they brought him in. How much longer of a leash would that guy have?
It'd be a lot longer because, A, Nick Saban, Urban Meyer, and Bob Stoops are proven recruiters.
Yeah, and winners.
And winners.
Yeah.
Mike Riley's still a 500 coach at Oregon State. Yeah. And that, and I think here's what I think people are upset about. You look at the talent field that was out there, and the way college football is going, it's a younger movement. We're talking guys late 30s, early 40s becoming head coaches. I think people looked at this and said, man, you hired a 500 coach from an average program, and he's on the last leg of his career instead of a guy who's up and comer and maybe a little bit hungry. And whether that's fair or not, I don't know if it is, but I would say that's what a lot of people are thinking. But you bring up a good point about if they start winning. And this was here's another reactionary comment that I want to hear from you. Here's Mike Riley at the Monday press conference talking about the direction the Huskers are going in.
My biggest focus is 135 players I have. You know, so with all of this going on, you know, we have to. We can't be distracted. We I know are doing good things in the program, and good things in solidifying what we know to be good football. And we have to spend our time and our focus to make sure those kids are all growing and okay. Because it's a as we've said before, it's a mental battle as much as anything that we encounter in these situations. But we can't be distracted by that. We have to stay the course and do what we think is right, and keep doing it. And know that there are better days ahead. I'm more confident about that, even in a bad situation, than ever as to where we can go. And we're excited to get to do that. And we're excited about the challenge, but also the opportunity that is presented this week and the following weeks in the games.
Are better days ahead?
Okay, hold on. I got no idea what he just said right there. he just gave us the uber positive Oregonian coach speak of, well, it is what it is.
That took 57 seconds. That's all he had to say was, it is what it is.
Yeah, I mean, he just says, we're super excited about good things, and we're focused on the good things, and what we're excited about, we're excited about the good things, and those things are good things because we're excited about them. I mean, it was, I got no idea what that answer said, other than the guy's high on life. I'll give him that.
He's high on life. Do you think he needs to make some assistant coaching changes? Bill Callahan refused to do so.
Here's the thing. Bill Callahan's defensive coordinator couldn't stop the run nor the pass. Nebraska, with what I consider to be a somewhat subpar defense, including a subpar defensive line, they can stop the run. I think they get tired. I think that Wisconsin game, they lived on the field. I think the Purdue game, they lived on the field. And I think they just got tired. I mean, at some point, that ability to stop the run is going to break down when exhaustion sets in. They don't have a lot of depth. They don't have a lot of quality depth, so I think they get tired. Nebraska's been doing a very good job at stopping the run. I don't know if I'm if I've wholly bought into this Mark Banker's a horrible defensive coordinator yet. There's part of me that's sitting here going like, God, he's got okay players and he's just completely shutting down the running game of everybody we've played. They're getting just utterly destroyed by the pass, and oddly the last 2 weeks this tall, slow, lumbering white quarterbacks have an ability to run for 60 plus yard TDs on us at will now. God, I mean, it's
that looked like Marv Seiler, the Purdue game, didn't it? I was thinking of you. I'm like, oh my God, Rob is he's seeing Marv Seiler.
You know, I was. That first thought that went through my mind. The other thought that went through my mind is Travis is watching this and he's thinking that I'm thinking it's Marv Seiler. Why Nebraska susceptible to that, I'm not sure. But I know there's a hole talent-wise at defensive back. I know the defensive line's not great. I know they're incredibly thin at linebacker. I'm not sold that he's a horrible defensive coordinator yet, just because I've never seen a coach who can so utterly and completely shut the run down. But at the same time, too, it just seems so weird that a guy that just can't stop the pass to save his life. So I don't know. He's the guy who, just out of demented curiosity, I want to see him work for a couple of years, see if he gets some better ball players at defensive back, and see what happens. Because I'm curious to see, can the guy not defend the pass, or is he truly just in need of better recruits? And he's been panned all the time. I mean, I've been reading blog postings from Oregon, longtime Oregon State fans and Oregon State beat writers.
Did you see the open letter to Nebraska fans this week?
I did. I saw that. That came through on the Twitter feed. Yeah, which, again, there's a guy whose number one qualification is that he's a huge Oregon State fan. Number two, the guy appears to have some marginal sports broadcaster journalism.
That's what I have, marginal sports broadcaster journalism.
Okay, well, no, this was your career for the better part of 20 years.
Ever since I was 16, so yeah.
You've got more chops than this guy does. That being said, I loved his line about how he said, he goes, I assume Mark Banker's become a dirty word in Lincoln, much as it was in Corvallis, Oregon, all those years. Nobody in the Pac-12 runs the damn ball. So maybe the only thing this guy had to defend against was the pass. And maybe he's a horrible pass defensive coordinator. Maybe he's great against the run. He just never had to face it in the Pac-12.
All right, more instant reaction from Mike Riley.
We certainly did give up 55 points. We also gave them 28 of them, right? So
35, Mike, 35.
I can't. I see the point from the beginning to Saturday, but I look at this league and I see all the time those kinds of scores.
What?
You just have to win those games and do better than that.
Big 12.
What league are you looking at? You don't see those scores in the Big
just,
Ten.
I think he just stroked out. I think he just went Dick Clark there.
3, 2, 1, Happy New Year!
I like when Dick got stuck on 10. We're talking about a dead guy. God bless his soul.
But you don't see those scores in the Big Ten.
No. Well, when Nebraska plays Wisconsin, you do, I suppose.
And Purdue. But, I mean, you don't see those scores. I think he was scrambling right there. And Dirk Chatelain from the World Herald had asked him, are you getting worse every week? Are you getting worse as the season goes along? And I think they are.
I think the mental attitude, I think their confidence level, how do you put up with this week in and week out? And I got to be honest with you, I don't know. We were not a good high school football team. And it's the season.
At Lincoln East,
the Spartans, baby. We always had college football players. We always churned out college kids. We just couldn't put it together as a team, chemistry. But, it wears on you. And, I mean, that's really the last time I had to experience that. I mean, then you go to Nebraska, and I spend 4 years playing, and, I mean, my worst season was 9-3. half my college career I played for a national title.
I mean, you're pretty good.
We did okay. Two out of the 4 years we're playing for a national title. I don't know what it's like to put up with that week in and week out. And a lot of these losses have been heartbreaking. I almost kind of wonder if this Purdue game was just screw it, we're cashing it in. Guys just kind of showed up half-hearted. If this was
either that or you think you're going to win and you take Purdue too lightly. I mean,
God, can these guys take anybody too lightly?
No. Well,
maybe they can. I mean, I don't know. It's hard to judge a mindset of a team in this position because these guys got so much flux going on. You got a new coaching staff. I mean, you're still kind of trying to find your way with that. Everybody views it as a transition period anyway. You know, you lose 2-3 games, and all of a sudden you're kind of behind the eight ball. You've got the pressure on you. You lose another game. And you know, if you're one of these teams that isn't a winner at Nebraska, you're kind of relegated as a footnote to Nebraska football history.
That's a very good point, is that you are relegated to footnote.
I mean, all of a sudden you become one of the irrelevant teams that nobody cares about.
Of course, the Huskers are going to be at home this weekend to play Michigan State. The Spartans are ranked 7th in the first college football playoff committee poll. If you're going to go to the game, make sure to visit the Chicago Doghouse Weenie Wagon. Kelly Keegan is going to be down there at 9th and P before and after the game, serving up your favorite Chicago-style hot dog, brats, and much more. It's the Chicago Doghouse Weenie Wagon. You can also visit their store in Omaha, 3157 Farnham. The cool thing about the Weenie Wagon is that you can rent that thing out for like parties, events. So if you got a graduation, you got a kid's birthday party, you can rent that thing out. I've actually hired Kelly to come into one of my project sites and do a lunch for the guys during the middle of the day. So get a hold of the Chicago Doghouse for a great hot dog. And if you got a party, you can bring the Weenie Wagon, which you'll see at 9th and P, to your party or event today. And I mentioned the Huskers are at home on Saturday night to play Michigan State. And Mike Riley, again, talking about the opportunity.
There's all different kinds of challenges to get ready for a team like Michigan State. They're obviously good, and there's obviously the challenges of where we are. Like I said, our biggest battle is probably ourselves mentally, but we can overcome that, and we can get ready to play and have a great opportunity to win.
So the Huskers aren't eliminated from bowl contention yet, and Rob, I pick on Nebraska a lot, but I'll be the first to say, I still think they can win these next games. I really believe that. Iowa's going to be a different story. I think they can compete with Michigan State. The Rutgers, if they lose to Michigan State, it'll be interesting to see how they go to the Rutgers situation. Then, you know, we were talking about Iowa before the game, and you think they're going to beat Iowa. And I want to tell you this because, full disclosure, I host the Iowa Hawkeye.
This crushed my soul when you told me this.
Well, I host the Iowa Hawkeye postgame show on WHO in Des Moines. I have for 3 years. And the big motivating factor for Iowa this year, Iowa's 8-0. I was ranked 9th in that first college football playoff committee poll. The big motivating factor for Kirk Ferentz, from a lot of people within the Iowa circle, say it was Sean Eichhorst. When Eichhorst fired Bo Pelini and said, well, I had to judge where the Iowa program was, how Bo came back and Nebraska beat Iowa last year in Iowa City. The big motivating factor for Kirk Ferentz, with kind of the wake-up call, was getting called out by another athletic director from a Big Ten institution by saying, well, I had to judge where Iowa's program was. So Iowa's turned around, is now a top 10 team. Nebraska's gone the other way. You thought or think that Nebraska could beat Iowa, but I give you that little piece of information. I don't think they're going to look past Nebraska because I think that's bulletin board material. You're silent.
Well, see, my problem is that I went into the game, in my mindset going into the Iowa game, my logic was at this point in time, I'd been thinking, okay, Iowa's going to go into that Nebraska game undefeated. They're going to have at that point, they'll have clinched the Big Ten West. It'll have been clinched at that point. That's a massive letdown game. It's after a holiday. You've got the division clinched. You're going to the Big Ten title game regardless of what happens against Nebraska. You know, if you want to use jargon, it's a trap game. And that was my logic. And then you told me that. And that's one of those things where, you know, bulletin board material, I mean, it only goes so far. You know, you get a couple of, you get 3 to 5 plays into a game, nobody cares about bulletin board material. It's what matters is when you have sort of this underlying season-long anger. And that's different than bulletin board material. When I was at Nebraska, we kind of had that against Colorado. We had some of these weird losses against Colorado that just, oh God, it just pissed us and it pissed the coaching staff off. And it still grinds me that I went 3-0-1. That one tie just gnaws at me. And part of the reason it gnaws at me is because they had several penalties against us that the refs never called in. I know guys who know the referees who flat out said the referees refused to make the calls at Colorado because it's a night game in Colorado. This was when Colorado was good. They sold alcohol in the stadium. They said the referees, frankly, were afraid to have to try and leave the stadium allowing Nebraska to win. It's a miracle we got out of there.
Colorado had the greatest press box ever because as soon as the clock hit zero, they opened the cooler for the media to drink while they wrote their stories. Coors Light and Coors Heavy.
Heck.
It was awesome.
Hey, the cooler was open all game long for the fans. That's why I'm sitting on the sideline getting whiskey bottles and snowballs chucked at my noggin all throughout the game at that place. But we did. We had that underlying anger against them. And I remember in 92, they came into Lincoln and we're ticked off about the fact that we had to tie him because the refs were too chicken shit to make a proper call.
You're foul mouthed tonight, man.
Multiple times during that game in 1991 in Boulder. I mean, it arguably one of the worst officiated football games I've ever been involved with.
So
the and so then we turned around and just destroyed Colorado 52-7 in Lincoln.
I remember that game.
Oh, such a good day.
So the Huskers have Michigan State at Rutgers in Iowa. Your folks are Michigan State grads, so you're wearing the green this week.
I wore my Michigan State shirt today.
Did you?
Yeah.
So, I mean, what are they? Do they go 1-2? They go 2-1?
I don't know.
And
that's
the
problem is because the optimist in me looks at this and goes, okay, this could be a trap game for Michigan State. Nebraska historically has been kind of this weird matchup for Michigan State over the last several years. I think Nebraska had a case of the, I don't know what's going up to East Lansing last year. And they came back and could have beat Michigan State last year. They should have beat them. They had, what was it, something obscene, like 5 or 6 turnovers in Lincoln in 2013. They should have beat them in 2013. They beat them in 12. They beat them in 11. Basically, Nebraska has probably been the biggest thorn in Michigan State's side over the last 4 years. The optimist in me, which now that, I mean, that optimism is a little, it's getting a little jaded now at this point, but the optimist in me says, yeah, they could knock Michigan State off if the stars align right. Rutgers is a horrible team, but damn
so
it.
So is Purdue.
So is Purdue. Look what happened there. And then, like I said, potentially another trap game with Iowa. Maybe Nebraska knocks them off. So you've got this bright-eyed, grew-up-in-Lincoln optimism that says Nebraska could finish the season 6-6. The realist in me is looking at this going, okay, you know what? Michigan State's a hell of a focused team. They got a lot of experience, and they got a damn good coach in D'Antonio. I think they come into Lincoln and they beat Nebraska. I think Nebraska's soul is crushed. They go out to New Jersey and get beat by Rutgers on the road because at that point they don't care. And then I think they come back to Lincoln and Iowa comes to town, and I still think Nebraska knocks off Iowa.
But you're going to have, at that point, if Nebraska loses to Michigan State and at Rutgers, people are unloading their tickets. You're going to have 30,000 Iowa fans in that stadium. It'd be interesting, but you know as well as I do. I don't know which one they win. I think they I think they win two. I don't know if they beat Michigan State.
Unlikely they could go. They could go 3-0.
Yeah, I don't think they go 3-0. I think they actually go 2-1. They're either going to beat Michigan State, or they're going to beat Iowa. I think they beat Rutgers, but I think they're going to pull off an upset. I really do. I don't know which one, but I think there's an upset there.
If they beat Michigan State, I think they get their shit together and go 3-0.
But if they go 0-3, if you think it's bad now. Oh, dude, it's not going to be pretty. You can't polish that turd any way whatsoever. People are not going to be able to handle a 3-win season.
But do you fire?
No, you don't know
after one.
But
year?
I tell you,
do
what,
you think the pressure gets bad? And here's my other.
You know
question.
Who the pressure's on? The pressure's on Sean Eichhorst. It's not on Mike Riley.
That's my question: is what happens? Perlman's gone. Do you think a new AD comes in, shit cans Eichhorst right away, and starts moving towards a new coach?
Yeah, that'd be interesting. I mean, but people aren't going to do 3 wins, and people are going to come up. 4 wins, and people are going to come unglued.
Losses.
Or 4 losses, yeah. Or no, 4 wins.
Oh, you mean on the whole?
On the whole, season. Yes. That's not going to fly.
Well, you get 4 wins, that means they go 1-2 last. So,
you know, before we let everybody go, because we've talked a long time, but the first college football playoff poll has come out. Clemson is number one. And I wanted to come back to talent because remember in Bo Pelini's first season, and this validates what you said earlier, is that the talent never kind of kept up to that championship place. Bo Pelini beat Clemson in his first year as head coach at the University of Nebraska in the Gator Bowl. You look to where these teams are now. Nebraska is 3-6. Clemson's 8-0 and ranked number one in the country. They are number one in that first college football playoff poll. So that shows you the different directions two programs have gone in the way of recruiting, in the way of expectations. Rob, you made a very good point, is that Pelini got 9 wins a year, but he got lucky. And I think Nebraska, you're absolutely, Nebraska got very lucky under Bo Pelini. And Nebraska, no matter where they were, was not playing the way Clemson is right now. Clemson's a really good football team.
Oh, God, they look athletic.
They do.
And they continue to get just incredibly high-quality athletes there.
So you have Clemson at number one, LSU at number two at 7-0, Ohio State, your defending national champions, number three at 8-0, Alabama, a one-loss team at number four, Notre Dame, a one-loss team at number five, Baylor's number six at 7-0, Michigan State's number seven at 8-0, TCU at 8-0, Iowa at 8-0, number nine, Florida 7-1 at number 10. So you got four other undefeated teams outside of the top 10 in Memphis, Oklahoma State, Toledo, and Houston. But so you have Alabama and Notre Dame, which are ranked ahead of some undefeated teams. And earlier on ESPN, the committee chairman, Jeff Long, who's also the, now they give him, I know Trev Albert says this at UNO, they give people fancy titles, vice chancellor in charge of athletics at the University of Arkansas, talked about putting the one loss teams ahead of the undefeated teams.
You know, there was a number of discussions about those undefeated teams and whether a one-loss team should be ranked ahead of them. So we spent a lot of time looking at that. And really, though, it came down to evaluating their resumes, what they've done, who they've beaten, and how they've played in those games.
Listen, here's the deal. Notre Dame's only loss is a close, close loss at Clemson, your number one team. Alabama lost at home to Ole Miss. But if Alabama loses to LSU this weekend, it's a moot point. They're gone, too. This is the first poll. It's all going to work itself out.
What, you know, I saw a posting out there about Ohio State being, what are they?
Number three.
They're number three.
Yeah.
At this point last year, that first poll last year, they were, what, like 13,
16.
14?
They were 16.
I know they were in the teens. And, I mean, yeah, so how do you, you can't. Again, even this poll, you can't put a lot of stock in it.
You can't, and the committee never really wanted to do this poll. ESPN is making them come out so they have something to talk about. But here's the deal: if you like the Big Ten, and hopefully people want a Big Ten team to succeed, you got Ohio State there, you got Michigan State there, you got Iowa there. Whoever wins that, let's say Iowa goes unbeaten in the West, and then you got an unbeaten team playing in the East. Whoever wins that game is going to be in the playoff.
Oh, hands down.
There's no doubt about
it. Yeah, I agree with that. You know, the interesting thing is they were talking about all the potentials of what if Iowa picks up a loss, but then wins the Big Ten.
No, Iowa loses, it's out. I mean, their strength of schedule is not that good. And I know people are going to say, well, they've got quality wins. And if you look at it, based on what they've played so far, yes, but the remainder of their schedule is weak. Iowa loses, it's gone. You're not going to put them in the same category as Alabama. And my Hawkeye fans would get mad at me, but I'm a realist when it comes to that. If Iowa loses, because it would lose to it has,
well, Nebraska.
Nebraska left. It has Minnesota left. It has Indiana this weekend.
It's a sad schedule.
Yeah, and Purdue. That's who they've got left.
Which Minnesota should have knocked off Michigan.
So you look at that. You look at those four teams that Iowa's got left. No way. You lose one of those, you're out. Yeah. You can still win the West, and you can still win the Big Ten Championship, but you're going to be out. Boy, that was a fast podcast. Hope you enjoyed it. Make sure to follow he's a doctor. What the hell am I thinking?
Mister.
He's Mr. I'll call him Doctor. Dr. Rob Zadiska on Twitter at Doc Talk Sports. Don't forget, the presenting sponsor of the Husker Doc Talk podcast is the Remington Trophy. Go to RemingtonTrophy.com to get the latest on the award presentation. And don't forget the award ceremony coming up January 16th at the Rococo Theater in downtown Lincoln, where Lee Corso will be your guest speaker. Jeff Saturday will be your Ford Legends Award winner. We'll find out in early December who the Remington Trophy Award winner is. For Dr. Rob Zadiska, I'm Travis Justice. We'll talk to you next week on the Husker Doc Talk podcast. We'll be right back.